Swift.
Oh. Wow, that sounded not disturbing at all, Johnny. Royston and Drenter at a buffet bar, we've returned for more. The Tyler's Den podcast is back for the new season as Reading prepare for life under Yap Stam. We'll look back on all of the major talking points from the summer so far, from the seven new signings to what's left to do, our entry into the Auto Windscreen Shield or EFL Trophy, whatever you want to call it these days, and much, much more. Welcome to the Tyler's Den podcast, episode number 96. If you're just joining us for the first time, hello, my name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetilelessden.com. And if you're joining us for the 96th time, congratulations, you deserve one of those long service medals. Unfortunately, being the unprofessional joke of a podcast we are, we don't have any to give out. And joining me is a man who's been here for just about a good fair amount of those 96 episodes, is deputy editor Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
Come raise the bat soon. Do I get a testimonial?
Again, unprofessional joke clause 2.7 says no.
Okay, come to be expecting that, really.
And the fresh-faced newcomer to this podcast, even though you are slowly getting into veteran territory yourself, is Dave Handbags Harris. Dave, hello.
I've got to be nearing 50 now, haven't I?
Yeah, I think you've put in a good shift. As
18 months or so, something like that.
Yeah, you've done well. You've elevated yourself to regular status.
Lasted most of the Reading squad anyway, more than most of them anyway.
Well, and managers.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, as we mentioned in the summer show, unfortunately Westy has entered semi-retirement now.
Boo.
Yeah, he's given up, but you know, he put in some very good service over those 7 years, and his voice will return to this podcast at some stage this season, I have been assured.
You had to get him off the wage bill, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're losing our parachute payments and all things like that.
Premier League signing, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Comes with those big wages, Premier League contract.
Big money. So yeah, no Westy. He is going to take part in the Prediction League though, so you can look forward to that, and we'll get onto that right at the end of the show. But in the meantime, we've got a lot to get to. I said it's been a good few weeks since we've recorded, and a lot has happened at Reading Football Club, so let's delve straight in to News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tylehurst End podcast.
Unfortunately, we have to start News Bites on a sad note. One of the biggest stories of the summer was the passing of Reading's academy head, Eamon Dolan, a much-loved and respected figure at Reading Football Club, gave tremendous service to Reading and unfortunately passed away due to losing his battle with bladder cancer. He'd already fought off the disease once, but unfortunately just couldn't quite pull through for a second time. Very sad occasion, gents. Obviously, unfortunately, it happened quite a while ago now, but the tributes are still fresh in people's memories. And what will you remember about Eamon's time at Reading Football Club?
Well, personally, I actually was privileged enough to spend a couple of hours in his company, just purely off the cuff. I went to Bromley back in 2009. A Reading 11 played there, and as you'd expect, Eamon Dolan was there. I was meeting an Exeter City fan there, as it turned out. And Eamon was kind enough, generous enough to just literally give us two hours of his time while the match was on. In fact, we didn't really see much of the match because, you know, we were too busy talking to Eamon. He was thoroughly generous, thoroughly genuine, clearly intimately knowledgeable about the club. This was just after Brendan Rodgers had taken over, and he had some interesting and quite insightful things to say. And as I say, he came across as a thoroughly genuine and decent chap, and which kind of reflects everything that I've heard about him away from those 2 hours that I spent with him.
Johnny, how much will he be missed by the football club?
He'll be missed a great amount, and I think you see that in the amount of outpouring of emotion and tributes that came in the aftermath of what happened. All the players that not only came through the academy, but have just been at the club, have said, you know, how much he influenced them, how much he influenced their game. And you've seen it over the last few years. The academy has had a real crop of talented youngsters that have come through, and they've all, in some way, been influenced by Eamon Dolan. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to come onto it, but it's a fitting tribute, what the club have decided to do for Eamon.
Yeah, the news, if you haven't heard it, the North Stand, they actually launched a renaming competition, as it were, at the start of the summer, just to, and they took in various ideas, and unfortunately this news happened during this process, and understandably in the immediate aftermath there are a lot of suggestions that it should be named the Eamon Dolan Stand, and that is what they have gone for. It will be the Eamon Dolan Stand. They're going to open it on Saturday against Preston. There'll be a plaque unveiled. Eamon's family will be there with Sir John Medeski, and fans will be invited to show their respects. The players will wear black armbands as well. It's the very least they can do. When the original idea was launched to name the North Stand, I think a lot of people were saying it should be somebody, not that's maybe had that short, you know, exciting success of a Steve Coppell or even a sort of long distinguished playing career. A lot of people did say it should be someone that works hard behind the scenes. If you look at the people that are recognised by the club currently outside the ground, it was Maurice Evans and Ray Chanter, two people that weren't necessarily at the forefront of Reading Football Club, but did such good work over such a long period of time. And Eamon fit that bill perfectly. As you mentioned, Dave, great bloke behind the scenes. Nobody, I've heard not a single person say a bad word about him. You know, since his news or before, you know, it's very easy sometimes for people to eulogise over someone that's befallen such an unfortunate, untimely death. But, you know, even before, not a single person said a bad word about Eamon Dolan. He was so respected. And John, as you said, all the tributes afterwards are only going to prove that. So, fitting tribute, as far as I'm concerned, I think we'll all agree that in terms of who you could name it after, I don't think there's that many people you'd put above Eamon Dolan, if any.
No.
Nope.
No. And as I said, our deepest condolences do go out to Eamon's family and friends. And hopefully Saturday gives them a little bit of a reason to smile in such a difficult time. And as I said, everyone at the Tyler Stand passes on their condolences there. Right, let's move on to other football club business that's happened over the summer. We'll come on to transfer business in just a few minutes' time. But let's get a few news bites out of the way. The first one is that there's been a bit of a shake-up of the youth football system in the country, especially as it befits Reading Football Club. Our academy, as you well know, led by Eamon Dolan for so many years and the success they've had, they were already in the top tier of under-21 football. They've now rebranded that. They've rebranded that Premier League 2, and it will now be enabled for players up to the age of 23. So now you can keep more players close to the club and they can play in that competition without counting as overage players. You can still field, I think it's 3 overage players per game, possibly 4. Might be getting my facts completely wrong here. But it just gives it beefs up that competition a little bit more. Obviously, there's not really reserve team football now. So I think it's a move designed to keep sort of more players at football clubs rather than sending them out on loan, especially because the emergency loan window, as we know it, has been abolished by FIFA. I think there's still certain buy little clauses you can get around the system, but generally it's gone. So the days of loaning someone in the middle of October have sadly gone. So this move designed to hopefully boost under 21 or under 23 football, is it now? And we're in European competition as well, gents. We get to play.
We're going on a European tour.
Finally. Not quite. Unfortunately, all the games are in England. But we do get to play European teams. So there you go, bit of glory.
Yeah. See the future stars coming to the Mad Stad or Hogwood Park? I assume they'll be at the Mad Stad, will they?
I think some games are there, and yeah, some games are at Hogwood, and some games are also being played at Adams Park as well in Wickham.
Okay.
So, but along with that, the biggest shake-up of youth football, as it pertains to Reading anyway, is the fact that the Football League trophy, the auto windscreen shield, Johnston's paint,
LDV Vans, that's LDV the one Vans, I remember.
Whatever you want to call it, the Associate Members Cup.
Associate Members Trophy, if I'm
No, oh, there right. We go. Anyway, they've had a big shake-up of that competition and they've now invited in Category 1 academies. Now, Reading initially weren't invited. It was some of the big clubs. I think only one team outside the Premier League was invited. But thanks to a lot of clubs snubbing it, saying, actually, we don't really want to take part in this competition, Reading got in. So, you know, through the back door.
A late charge. Typical Reading style.
Yep, we've nicked it at the last minute. So we have been drawn in a group stage to play Portsmouth, Yeovil and Bristol Rovers. So it's up to our under-21s. We have to field 6 of those and then 5 senior players can play. Portsmouth fans haven't reacted well to this. Mm. They are planning a walkout in protest of the shake-up to this competition. There's been a lot of mixed reactions, especially amongst fans of lower league clubs, because historically this was a great chance for them to get to Wembley to win a bit of silverware. You know, it was one of the few little benefits of being in the bottom 2 divisions. And now suddenly you're getting Premier League academies and Reading's academy. You know, you're talking about a championship team that only finished, what, 3-4 places above the relegation zone, suddenly being in this competition. Dave, what do you make of it, this change? Are you happy with it? Not happy?
Not really. It's a slightly disturbing step along the way to having reserve teams or second teams in first team competition, as it were, like they have the model that they have in Spain, and as we know, they have in Holland and various countries around Europe. And we've never had it in this country. I don't see there's any reason for it in this country. So what's the point? Just a quick word on the whole Pompey thing. I think it's slightly ironic that they should be the ones performing the walkout. I think it would have a great deal more credibility if the walkout was going to be performed by other clubs within the competition, based on the fact that these are the same supporters that quite happily rode the gravy train under Harry Redknapp and all the unsustainable signings that he made, and got basically bought them an FA Cup. There's a little bit of karma for you, certainly in my book, that they've, as a result of riding that gravy train, they've now got to play Reading's under-21s in a first-team competition. So, how's your luck? Bad luck.
Well, not that I wish Portsmouth ill, but, you know, yeah, they do deserve it. Johnny?
Yeah, no, I think it's a really good idea. I'm opposed to Dave in this, because it's like I sort of speculated in that mid-season podcast that we did. I think if you're a younger player, perhaps an under 20, an under 21, and you have the choice of coming to Reading's academy, the fact that we are one of these academies that is taking part in this, it's that thing about being closer to the first team and seeing that route to the first team. If you're playing against League Two sides or League One sides, perhaps in the under 21 league, then you're going to be able to, you know, it's almost a higher standard competition, assuming these teams do put out full teams. I mean, you can't guarantee that, obviously, but I think it's another step along the way to attracting talent to a club like Reading. If we're playing these European teams, if we're playing League One, League Two teams, proper sides, rather than just under 21 competition, then you can sort of say to a player, look, we, you know, you have an opportunity to impress, and you're more likely to get into our first team. So I think it's a good idea for Reading. I can see why other teams higher up the pyramid, if you like, or, you know, with a deeper base of youth talent, aren't so happy about it. And I can see why the lower clubs are unhappy about it. But I think for a club of Reading's stature, with the academy that we have, I think it's, purely from a selfish point of view, I think it's a fantastic venture for us.
Well, of course, if all the clubs that had been originally invited had accepted, we wouldn't be in it at all. So
no,
this is true.
But, you know,
marketing, money. As a lot of it is just basically money behind it. Mm-hmm. It's another marketing tool. Lower league clubs are clearly hoping that the top end Premier League clubs are going to be playing up and coming youngsters, but also presumably, you know, so players, like, I remember a few years ago we played an under 21 match against Chelsea. Ashley Cole was coming back from injury, and Ashley Cole played in the game, and he must have stuck a couple of thousand on the gate alone. They're clearly hoping for that, and they've been a bit usurped by this the decision. Thing.
I don't agree with the principle of it in terms of, you know, what it does for the Premier League and almost, you know, almost boosting those higher clubs even further ahead of the lower clubs in terms of that, but, you know, the system is there, and I think Reading have the perfect opportunity to exploit it.
Yeah, we could, you know, you can get on a decent roll, you get a decent draw, and you play the right teams, and suddenly you're at Wembley. The competition has been shaken up in a massive way. You can head over to thetarlesson.com to read the full slate. Gone are days of area finals and things like that. It's more of a straight knockout competition after this initial group stage. It's only you play each team once, so it's not going to drag on the fixture list. But I think all of this, you take this whole package, and it is designed to give bigger teams more control over their youth players. You heard Jurgen Klopp speak last season. He wasn't a massive fan of sending players out on loan, because you lose that control over the way they're being trained, the way they're sort of taught. And if you can get more competitive football for those fringe players within your own structure, it helps bigger clubs. Although, Dave, I find it funny that we had this kind of system 10 years ago. It was called reserve team football. And they went away from it massively. You know, they abolished everything. You know, they got rid of the Avon combination back in the day.
Yeah.
And back then you used to have, you know, my dad tells stories of going to watch Reading reserves play in front of a couple of thousand at Elm Park. You used to sort of have this system, and they got away with it thinking, oh no, you know, we like to loan players and it's all about the youth football. And now very slowly it's creeping sort of back in. So I don't know why they don't go the whole hog, but
just to make a point on that as well. I mean, I don't know whether it's Stam sort of assessing his squad ahead of the upcoming season, but we haven't really seen too many players shipped out on loan just yet.
No.
From the under 21 squad, so it could be that he's got an eye on this and he's sort of saying, well, you know, we can make a run at this, not necessarily get a trip to Wembley, but certainly have it field a competitive under 21 side against League One, League Two sides, against European sides, and against the other Premier League sides as well. So maybe he's got an eye on this, and he's thinking, well, actually, you know, in terms of our academy, this is for the betterment of our youth players.
Yeah, certainly one to keep an eye on for the next few months and seasons as well. It'll be very interesting to see what the reaction is once these games get underway. Just before we go on to the transfer news of the summer, just thought I'd bring up that myself, along with Dave and several other representatives from various fans groups, from Star and from various sort of other sections of the Reading fan base, were invited along to a meeting with Tiger, one of the Reading co-owners. The chief executive, Nigel Howe, was there as well. And we were sort of given an opportunity to sort of voice our opinions, our concerns to Tiger earlier this summer. He was invited us to the Maneski Stadium. You can read an account of that meeting up on thetirelessend.com. But Dave, I just wanted to get your sort of general feedback. I mean, I wrote the piece that went up on the Tireless End, but you were there as well. What were your sort of general reactions from the stuff that we're allowed to say anyway?
Overall, I mean, general reaction from the meeting was that he was very frank, very open, very honest. There's some quite eye-opening things that were said. As a person, he seemed to be thoroughly genuine. He seemed to certainly speak from the heart. He appeared to have the club's best interest at heart. I can't necessarily say that I agree with everything that they've done. They've certainly, as I've alluded to in previous shows, they've wasted 2 years. And Tiger has basically, as we now know, taken the ball by the horns and taken control, as it were. And we finally at least seem to be having some kind of structure being put in place. Whereas before, as we know, it was very bitty, complete opposite, completely unstructured.
There was a short-term approach, wasn't there? And there seems to have been for the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the points that I raised in the meeting was the fact that we let a load of high earners go from the TSI era, and we'd effectively trying to save money, and then Steve Clark and more importantly the Ties had gone and signed instead of just having one player on, say, 20, 25 grand a week, they were signing 2 and 3 players, and so we weren't actually saving any money, so we're actually in the same situation or similar situation as we were when they first took over.
Yeah, there was a very divisive thinking during that period, but Tiger came and sort of said that, you know, and again, you can read more details of this in the article on the site, but he sort of came in and said, look, from April, I've been sort of running the ship and we've got a distinct plan going forward. He touched on the reasons why Brian McDermott was dismissed. He didn't want to go too much into that because Brian wasn't there, and Brian has been very dignified since his exit. He's not sort of spoken publicly, so they didn't want to either. But they did speak at length about why Yap Stam was given the job, and they spoke very glowingly of Stam. They admitted some of the problems with his appointment in terms of the experience factor, but they gave quite a few nice little anecdotes of stuff on the training ground, and again, I won't repeat them here, but Dave, I just came away with a general much more optimistic view of the ownership. I and you can hear if you listen to our season ending show and the one we did around Stam's appointment and McDermott sacking, we were quite negative, me and you especially. Johnny was a bit more sort of on the fence.
Well, my only point was that we've obviously been hurt by owners in the past. Yeah. So you just want to know that they have the best interests at heart. Not that they should come out every month and tell you what's happening, but just that they're visible.
Well, absolutely. But
and they seem to have done that.
Yeah. And in that show, I said, you can tell, you can go back and listen. I wasn't in the best place. I wasn't very happy with the way it was going. And Dave, I think you shared those interests as well. But do you feel better now, having had that meeting?
I feel more optimistic going forward and understanding more straight from the horse's mouth, as it were, that there is a structure and there is a plan in place now, which we haven't had, and it was so utterly obvious that there wasn't a plan. So for that reason alone, I'm more optimistic. Where the finances are concerned, not too sure, still not sure, being still really waiting for December to see those accounts come out and see exactly what the situation is. But as to the football inside, yeah, certainly more optimistic.
Yeah, you did definitely get the sense that this was a man that was very keen, that had great feeling for the football club, and as you said, had a plan to take it forward. Now, with all that being said, talk is cheap. And we did hear very similar things from Anton Zingarevich you know, he talked about grand plans, and obviously that didn't come to fruition. So this is still a very much wait and see, but it's good to have that dialogue going. And I think they realise now that they do need to be a little bit more open, and fingers crossed that continues.
I think certainly the fact that he's actually directly interacted with supporters now, he can be held accountable to something.
Yeah.
He knows that clearly. He's obviously an intelligent man. So if we can hold him to account at least, and say, you know, if things do start going pear-shaped, or they don't or he doesn't do as he's supposedly alluded, there is something to fall back on.
Yeah, and at that meeting they gave us again an off the record sort of idea of where they were heading transfer wise. Again, I can't say that. I was off the record. We'd have to keep that close to our chairs. But in terms of what has actually happened in transfer land, we've signed 7 players. Now, that was something I wasn't expecting in quite that volume. The players we've signed are Joey Vandenberg, Joseph Mendes, John Swift, Roy Behrens, Yacoub Mete, Denzel Gravenberch, or Daniel Gravenbach, as I called him at the last show.
Thomas Graveson.
Yeah, Thomas Graveson. And Ansi Yakola, the goalkeeper from Cape Town Ajax. Gents, are you happy with the signings we've had so far?
I'm happy with a couple of them. I think there are two ways to look at this, really. I'd veer more towards the cautiously optimistic side of them. I think John Swift certainly has excited the fans that have seen him so far in the couple of friendlies he's played. Roy Behrens comes with a good pedigree. But the others, you can't say that they're, you know, they're not outstanding or they're not guaranteed to succeed, really. Denzel Gravenberch comes from the Dutch second division. Joseph Mendes comes from the second division in France, and he's, you know, hardly been a prolific striker. And Joey Vandenberg, again, just seems to be a bit of a nomadic journeyman who's moved on from club to club to club, and now he finds himself in Reading.
And a bit of a psycho as well.
Yes.
Likes a yellow card, likes a red card.
He comes out of Ricky Newman.
Yeah, he holds the joint record, doesn't he, for most red cards in the Eredivisie.
He does.
So, should be interesting to keep an eye on the discipline on the Fair Play League this season. Dave, the general sort of opinion and one that Johnny's sort of taken really is, yeah, there's been quite a bit of investment in terms of personnel, in terms of numbers, but I do look at that and I think they've not actually spent an awful lot of money.
Yeah.
Now, that goes hand in hand with, if you look at the departures this summer, they've got rid of Simon Cox, Hal Robson-Kanu and Anton Ferdinand, all on free transfers. They sold Rowan Livard for a handful of pennies, I think, to Stevenage.
Mm-hmm.
And the big departure was Aaron Tischboller. Now, he went off to Aston Villa. He was a player Yapstan very clearly wanted to keep. He was one of the brightest prospects from the academy. And we saw during the first three months of last season what he could do. He went to Aston Villa for £5 million. Very clear this was a player-driven move. So it doesn't sound like there's anything Reading could have done to keep him. How disappointed were you that he left the football club?
Very. He was the pretty much future of the base of the midfield. And it's, I suppose in some ways when a club like Aston Villa comes calling and you're at Reading, it's very, very difficult to not have your head turned. And it happens all the time, absolutely all the time. But at the same time, when you've only played a dozen games or so and had a season on loan at Hartlepool, you kind of think that somebody's going to be whispering in the guy's ear and saying, look, give it a couple of years, develop as a player, and then grab your big, big money move rather than just a big money move to a big club who are just had a rotten, stinking season. So, you know, as a player, he was obviously big, strong, technically really quite gifted. And there's no question that he could have developed into a beast of a player for Reading. Very disappointed with his injuries last season. I really wanted to see more of him. And as it is, we're going to see more of him in a Villa shirt, presumably.
Good bit of money, though, Johnny. £5 million for a player, as we mentioned, that's only, you know, played, what, 2-3 months for Reading and a 6-month loan at Hartlepool.
Yeah, and I was sort of on the opposite side of the fence. Certainly myself and, you know, Get Reading's Charles Watts had a bit of a debate about this. How much could you really demand from him? You can't just go out and say, we want £10 million or, you know, £7 million for this guy who's played 12 championship games. I think he only started 6 games in the championship for us last season. you couldn't really demand or expect much more money for the, you know, for such a young kid. I mean, obviously Steve Clark has gone to Aston Villa. He will have seen him in training, and he will perhaps know about the potential of him. But I thought £5 million was a very fair price, and you can't blame him for making the move. Aston Villa have just come down from the Premier League. They're one of the favourites to go back up. We finished bottom half, near relegation for the last two seasons. It is an upwards move for him. I mean, we look at other clubs and you say, well, why has he gone there? That's a sideways move, or, you know, a downward step. That's not going to further his career. I think at Aston Villa, they are a lot closer to promotion, and certainly a lot closer to the top of the table than we are at the moment.
Yeah, but I'm with Dave, I think, on this one. I think you show some loyalty to the club you've been at. You're going to be in the Championship one way or the other this season, so why not be in the Championship with Reading? Boost your stock by being a good player even if it's a bad team. If you're good enough and your ability's there, you're going to get that big move.
People will see that in football. And if you're a good player and a bad side, you tend to stand out. If you're a good player and a good side, you don't necessarily stand out, but you know, you still have that kudos of, you know, being good enough to play in that good side.
Yeah, and if it was a case of money for wages, I'm sure Aston Villa have given him a decent wage, but I'm pretty sure if he'd gone to Reading and said, you know what, can you give me this good a better contract? I'm pretty sure Reading would have sat down and given him a decent wage bump. Just disappointing for someone to come through the academy and waltz out so quickly. You look at other youngsters that have come through and done well. They've given it a bit more time. Players like Gylfie Sigurdsson, Alex McCarthy and people like that. And for Tishbola just to waltz off straight to Villa is disappointing. I know what you're saying, Johnny. And I do sort of see merits in that, but for me, just really disappointing.
When you get a player that young, you don't know how they're going to turn out. As we said, he was injured most of last season, and as I just said, he had 6 starts in the Championship. Now, if you just look at the bare facts of it and say you're getting £5 million for a player who had 6 starts at the second tier of English football, has never been, or I think he might have had 1 or 2 England under-19 caps, but he's never been capped for, you know, the under-20s, under-21s, or has not had that much recognition. I think it's a cracking deal for the club. If it is £5 million up front, I'm sure there will be plenty of clauses involved in that one way or the other to take it under or over that magic £5 million mark. I've got no arguments.
I think financially, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a wonderful deal. You will not see many players leave Reading for £5 million having made, as you say, half a dozen starts, a dozen appearances. Ideologically, though, and you know, purely for footballing reasons, at this club, it's a bit of a stinker.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's just nothing you can do, because at the end of the day, if a player wants to move, the bid's on the table. What can you do? There's no point keeping him here if he's not happy. Mm. No point whatsoever.
As Johnny says, Steve Clark knows the player. He knows the potential, and you know, I'm sure, I'm absolutely convinced that Villa would have been, and even. Is it Di Matteo, their manager now?
He would have
questioned, you know, this guy's, you know, no doubt, no question would have questioned Steve Clark and said, this guy's hardly played any football. Because let's face it, he has hardly played any football. As I say, he's had a season of League Two where he's, you know, effectively kept Hartlepool up, or the catalyst for Hartlepool.
Not even a full season, half season.
No, half season. Mm. And then, a dozen appearances, and they're going to fork out £5 million for him, which, you know, even in this day and age, in the Championship, is a hefty sum. There aren't many players that go at this level go for £5 million.
Well, I think he's in the top 5 transfer fees that we've received for a player. I think Sigurdsson, Doyle, Long be above him.
Kitson, Sonko.
Sonko was less. Sonko was about 3.5.
Was about 5.5.
Sonko was
3.5, I believe.
2.5, something like that.
Kitson was 5.5 to Stoke.
Yep. Doyle, as you say, £6 million. Long was about £7 million. Sigurdsson, £6.5 million.
Yeah. And that's lofty company to be in.
Especially when you consider he's a less glamorous position.
Well, and as we've just been saying, just how few games he played. I mean, all of those players we're talking about had either proven it in the Premier League, or at Shane Long's case, a bit in the Premier League, but mostly at international and Championship level. So, you know, look, best of luck. You always wish luck for your academy products. I'm disappointed in him. I think Reading as a football club will be disappointed in him. But look, you know what? They're professionals and we just got to deal with it. So, yeah, best of luck, Tish. Look, we'll come on and discuss all of the new signings in much more detail in Pub Chat in just a few minutes' time, where we'll look through the entire squad and sort of give our assessment as to how we're shaping up for this season. So stay tuned. That'll be coming up just after this.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So, welcome to Pub Chat, and we will be going through the squad position by position and then finishing off with our sort of general feelings and expectations for the new season. Fodder for you 12 months' time to point out exactly how wrong we were. So, save this one in the can, folks. I've not dared listen to our predictions from last season. I'm sure they're all horrendously wrong. Although, I do remember at one point we all said we were going to win the league.
We all put money on us winning the league, didn't we?
You speak for yourself. Don't include me in that.
Just after we humped Ipswich on that Friday night on.
I think it's when we beat Middlesbrough. I think I started lumping on cash.
All right.
Anyway, let's not talk about how unprofessional joke and hashtag gamble aware.
Yeah. First gamble aware of the season.
Indeed. Get that in early. Right. Let's run through the squad, starting with the goalkeepers. On the books at the moment, Ali Alhabzi, last year's player of the season, Jonathan Bond, Ansi Yakola, the new signing, as mentioned, from Ajax Cape Town, and Stuart Moore is still on the books as well, plus a range of academy goalkeepers that probably aren't worth bringing up here. How do you look at the goalkeeping department at the moment? I think Jonathan Bond is very much looking an odd man out right now.
At the moment, Jonathan Bond, absolutely. But you know, at the same time, it's probably one of the weakest goalkeeping lineups we've had, certainly since I've been supporting the club. There are significantly better goalkeepers out there that we can afford. And I'm a little disappointed that we haven't actually gone out and got one. Having said that, Ali Alhabzi proved to be competent in the main. Obviously, we know he has a mistake in him, and it's going to be, you know, head in hands moment occasionally from him. Jonathan Bond. I can't really say much about Yakala because I haven't seen him play. And Stuart Moore, you know, he's young, but hopefully, fingers crossed, develop into something quite good.
Yeah, he had a few games out on loan at Peterborough last season, and the season before I think he was with Basingstoke, and he's got some decent reviews there. But I think very much fourth choice at the moment. Are you surprised, Johnny, that they went out and signed a goalkeeper this summer?
He was only on a free transfer, wasn't he? Or you'd imagine it was a pretty nominal fee. I mean, unless he's significantly better, then yes. Because like you say, Dave, I don't think any of those are standout goalkeepers. But I don't think you'd be worried if any of them, you know, they'd all be pretty decent backups in the championships. Just none of them seem like particularly standout candidates. Which is the more worrying thing. I was just going to say, didn't Ali Alhabzi win player of the season last year?
He did, yeah.
Well, second season in a row that we've had a goalkeeper, which kind of tells, player of the season, which kind of tells its own story, really.
I'm very surprised that they've gone and got Yakola, because for me, it just sums up the fact they have no faith in Bond. Or, positively, if you're Bond, you think, I'm being loaned out for this season. Now, this is a man who started last season as our number one and now suddenly finds him as number three. Are you surprised that they've given up on him quite so quickly, or am I reading too much into this and they haven't given up on him?
Well, the signs are that they have. I mean, you'd have to say that this is a kid who got England under 21 caps, or certainly was in the squad for, I don't think he was in the squad for the Toulon tournament, but, you know, the one last summer. It does seem like they are, perhaps. I mean, they see him day to day in training, so they must know something that we don't. But it is a little bit shocking to see another goalkeeper just seemingly, you know, you bring in another guy and suddenly you're third in the pecking order after seemingly having so much potential.
Brilliant, yeah. I mean, it's strange with him, really, because I spoke to a Watford fan last year, just after we signed him. And the long and short of it, I mean, the text message I've actually got, he's always felt that he had massive confidence issues. His head was always first to go when the going got tough, which is, you know, not exactly what you'd want from a goalkeeper.
No,
and that was back at Watford. He's always had an error in him. Now, obviously, he's very young, but temperamentally questionable.
Well, we saw it. You know, he cost us the game at Sheffield Wednesday by dropping one into his net. And when Brian McDermott came in, he initially restored him to the starting lineup, but within three or four games, he was gone again, and we didn't see him for the rest of the season. In terms of the man they've signed to replace him, Yakola, played for Ajax Cape Town. He has had a brief spell in Britain before with Kilmarnock, I do believe. Again, my team's completely confused, but had a very brief spell here. They'd spent the last couple of years, he's a former Finland international. He only played one game for his country so far anyway. Spent his last couple of years in South Africa with Ajax Cape Town, where he's been pretty good. He's been one of the highly regarded keepers in that league, the standard of which is very much questionable. But even so, he's a good presence. He's a big guy. I think he's around 6'5", 6'6". So certainly got the physical presence that you like from your goalkeepers. But so far this summer, he's very much seemingly been a number two to Ali Alhabsi. Do you think Alhabsi has got possession of those gloves going into the new campaign?
I think he has to if he's your player of the season, doesn't he?
I think, yeah, pretty much. Yep.
Yep. Right, so happy then. Ali Alhabsi, number one. Yakoda, two. And then Bond and Moore, three and four.
Content.
Yeah.
I was going to say exactly the same word.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
could do better.
We'll give that an average grade then. Right. Let's move on to the defence. And at the moment on the books are Chris Gunter, Tanai Watson, Jordan Obita, Rob Dickey, Dom Hyam, Zach Jules, Jake Cooper, Denzel Gravenberch, Paul McShane, and you've also got a bit of cover possibly in the form of George Evans and Joey van der Berg as well. Looking at that group of defenders, Johnny, it doesn't fill me with a lot of confidence.
No, very, very, very concerned. If you look at the transfers we've actually brought in, Mate forward, Gravenberch centre-back, Swift forward-thinking player, Behrens forward-thinking player, Mendes forward-thinking player, Vandenberg midfielder. We've only brought in one defender, Gravenberch, from the Dutch second division. Now, obviously, there are rumours around that we're about to sign Liam Moore from Leicester, which I think would be a cracking signing. But it doesn't leave you very confident, especially seeing as we know it's a defence that's not very good from last year. From what we've seen in pre-season, Yapstam doesn't seem to fancy Jake Cooper very much. He seems to have preferred McShane and perhaps Gravenberch or Vandenberg.
Jake Cooper's got the number three shirt, though. Surely he's a dynamic new left-back.
Don't get me started on squad numbers, honestly.
Sorry, carry on.
Do not get me started on squad numbers. But no, I mean, if one of those players, if McShane or if Gunter were to get injured, then you really would be down to the bare bones. And I think there's a lot of work to be done in the defence, not only in terms of depth. Okay, you know, it would be good to see the likes of Tanai Watson, Rob Dickey, Zach Jules, you know, for one or two games. But like I said, you don't want to rely on them for one or two months, because supporters expect that we field a team that is ready for the championship. You can't just throw a youngster in.
Dave, you mentioned about the goalkeepers, it's possibly the weakest crop you'd seen at Reading. For me, this is unquestionably the weakest crop of defenders we've had, especially when you consider the fact that there are transfer rumours swirling around Chris Gunter and rumours of a £1.1 million release clause being triggered by any number of clubs following an impressive Euro 2016, it has to be said. We won't mention the other guy who had an impressive Euro 2016 in the Wales squad, Gareth Bale. But yeah, for me, it's
hey, really, I put in a pretty good shift out in Wales as well. Johnny Williams
did very well. But yeah, for me, weakest crop going, and it's such an area of concern. You need to look at some of the goals we've conceded in pre-season.
Exactly. It's so unbelievably young and inexperienced. And I can't believe we're not going to go out and sign at least two defenders between now and the end of the transfer window. I mean, you look at that and say, Watson, even you could class Obita in this, you know, Dickey, Hyam, Jules, Jake Cooper, they're all very, very wet behind the ears, aren't they? Very, very young, very inexperienced. If we're going to be starting with any of those, with the exception possibly of Obita and Cooper, then, you know, they've got to step up.
An injury to McShane looks just, well, an injury, dread to think of
an injury to any. I mean, who would your first choice back four be?
No idea. Well, the very fact that Joey Vandenberg was playing centre back against Bournemouth, I think, rings alarm bells.
Exactly.
I know, as you mentioned, we are tracking Liam Moore. It does look like that deal is inching closer, but even so, he's going to be coming into the defence with very little training and preparation, and he hasn't played a lot of first team football either.
No,
in the past couple of years,
he'd bring versatility and he'd bring a lot of potential that perhaps hasn't been realised at Leicester. But that depth is just beyond the what you'd call the first choice back four. There's nothing.
They're going to need to be Kevin Keegan-esque, aren't they? They're going to need to score four, because that defence looks like it's going to leak three.
Yeah,
that's all you can say. It's concerning.
Totally football.
It is. But it is concerning.
You can spin it around, though. There is a lot of quality. Potential for quality. You know, Jake Cooper has now had a season a bit under his belt. Jordan Obita surely can't continue on this downward trajectory he's been on. And we've seen promising bits out on loan from the likes of Rob Dickey and Dom Hyam. Zach Jules as well, playing for Scotland under-21s. Graven Birch, you know, player.
Plays football.
Does play football. Yeah, he's got two legs and everything.
Professional.
He is, yeah. Unlike us. Yeah, very much so. So, if it does click, you know, certainly if you're looking more towards the season after this, there are certainly good building blocks, but they desperately, desperately need some experience in there. And I'm not even sure Liam Moore should be the end of it. Because they have lost Ferdinand. You know, that makes Michael Hector look experienced from that group. And I would like to see an Anton Ferdinand type figure, probably with a better injury record. Just get Anton Ferdinand back himself. Apparently he's been training with the club this summer, so he's clearly still a free agent.
I said at the end of last season I wouldn't mind seeing Anton Ferdinand back for another year. When you look at that depth, I think just about anyone would want him.
Hard to argue against getting him back, is it?
Yeah, I mentioned Chris Gunter as well. Those transfer rumours linking him with a move. Celtic amongst the clubs interested. How gutted would you be to lose Chris Gunter this summer?
Looking at that,
I'll start with you, Dave.
put me right on a flipping spot. Looking at that, I'd be not gutted, but very, again, even more concerned than I already am, because literally, who is going to play right back?
Gareth McCleary.
Quite exactly. You don't know exactly who's going to play there, so you lose your only right back, and you've got to play an out of position player there. And fullback is a critical position, particularly in championship football, in championship terms.
And in Stam's 4-3-3, there's a lot of defensive pressure on them.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what? I will slightly disagree there. I do think that right back is a position where you can sort of makeshift players. You can put sort of a makeshift player in there and not really suffer too greatly.
You wouldn't want to do it for a whole season, though, would you?
No, but I don't think you need a great quality player there. I think it's one of those areas you can get away with. I don't think many games are won and lost in the fullback positions. Although maybe I'm being a bit naive.
I think especially in Stam's system that we're going to see, you need a very athletic fullback, and you have to say that Chris Gunter's probably, well, just look at how many games he played last season for club and country.
Yeah, but you look at a lot of those players on that list, a lot of young players, they've got athleticism is one thing they should surely have.
But they won't have built up their bodies enough to go through 50 games in a championship season.
No, but what I'm saying is that you can hodgepodge it through. But I'm you know, if they do sell Chris Gunter, there's no way they're not going to sign a replacement.
Jake Cooper at right back.
Can't wait.
Left-footed Jake Cooper at right back.
Yeah.
It's Jay Tabb all over
again. He's number three, he's left back. Number two is right back.
Yeah. Get Jem Karachan back for a right back role.
Let's not forget that. Going completely off track here, Chelsea actually had a central defender as a number 9 in 2006-07.
Is that Paulo Ferreira, was it?
No. I can't think who it was. Central defender definitely played number 9. No.
Is it Gallas?
No,
it wasn't Gallas. Gallas had a ridiculous... He was like number 8 or something.
Yeah. Anyway. Right, let's move on. So we're saying basically we are all worried about the defence, I think it's safe to say.
Absolutely.
Right, moving into the midfield then. You've got Oliver Norwood, Danny Williams, Joe Vandenberg, Josh Barrett, George Evans, Liam Kelly, Stephen Quinn, John Swift, and Gareth McCleary. Plus, maybe as well, some of those others that can sort of do a job a bit further forward, like Graven Birch. Bit more solid, bit more experience, especially at the first sort of names on that list. If you kept that entire core together, I would be very happy. But again, you've got to take into account the persistent transfer rumours that surround Oliver Norwood and Danny Williams. Danny Williams, once again, doing another come and get me plea. Giving an interview to the American press and saying how he wants to play in the Premier League. He's not been very discreet about that. So sort of the chances of him staying for the full season seem slim. Oliver Norwood as well. He was full of plenty of transfer speculation, especially before the Euros. It's died down a little bit, but given how teams like Burnley and Hull haven't seemed to be doing a lot of transfer business, I can certainly see somebody snapping him up before the end of the window. How do you feel about the whole core of those midfielders, Johnny?
I think the core of them is decent. if you look at Norwood and Williams, two proven championship midfielders, I know that a lot of people are down on Williams at the moment, but quite frankly, if he's going to be here for the next season, I think he will thrive in Yapstam's system, and so you should get off his back right now in terms of wanting a move. I mean, everyone wants to play in the Premier League, but he's here, he's earning a decent wage, he's going to do his best as long as he's here. George Evans, I mean, we haven't really... He's a difficult one to assess. We didn't really see too much of him last season, and when we did see him, he certainly didn't stand out, but the potential is certainly there. John Swift, on the field at Brentford, looked a very fine player. Off the field, as we've seen with our interview with Billy the Bee, he was a bit of a questionable temperament, or of questionable Twitter decisions.
Some days they like me, some days they hate me, both days I got paid.
Yes. Yeah, great.
Quinn, yes,
I think there's a good mix of potential and proven championship players in that midfield core, if you like.
Dave, would you gamble on keeping Danny Williams and Oliver Norwood for a final season and letting them walk away on a free?
I think so, yeah. They complement each other. Certainly if you have the right coaching philosophy of and style of, in terms of style of play. And they're experienced. And yeah, Danny Williams hasn't exactly hit the heights that, you know, were expected of him over the last couple of seasons. But then you could say exactly the same for the rest of the side. He drives the team on. He's a wholehearted 100% player. And who cares whether or not he's, you know, spouted off to the American press about wanting to be a Premier League player. Plenty of players have done that in the past. Doesn't mean that they're any less committed to the club that's actually paying their wages now. I think many people should just lay off his back.
Whoa, you two very stout in your defence of Mr. Williams.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, I think it's too far to go and say, oh, well, you know, we could do without him. We've got better players at the club. Because I think he's one of the best players at the club.
My only argument against that is the fact that we need to get out of this habit now of letting players walk away without a transfer fee. We've sort of slipped into bad habits and letting players like Robson Kanu just walk away on a free. It's just bad business management, especially when we need the cash in. And you could get decent, hopefully decent money for both those players. You should be looking at around about $5 million for the pair of them.
Yeah, look money at Robson Kanu though over the not necessarily last season, but the three seasons prior to that. Who's going to pay any money for him?
Yeah, but any money's better than no money.
I'll get him off the books.
Yeah, and he was on a decent wage as well. And Danny Williams is the highest paid player at the football club, or he certainly was before the start of this summer. I don't know what some of the new signings are on anyway. And Oliver Norwood's probably not far behind him, and Norwood's probably one of our most saleable assets. So the only downside with this is, and it's one of the reasons I hate the transfer window going on from the start of the season, is you're just waiting almost to be picked up. Like I said, the Premier League doesn't start until a week after the Championship season. All it takes is one injury to a tip for a team like Burnley or a Hull, and suddenly he's been signed. So you're in a really difficult position if you're Yapstam. Do you play him? Do you not play him? Do you wait to the end of the window? Just don't know. But beyond those two, yeah, you've got some good players there. Not a lot of established wingers. I know I've included a fair few of them in the forward section we'll go on to shortly. But beyond Gareth McCleary, there's not a lot of proven talent to hit the flanks and get a decent crossing.
Well, I think, you know, like I keep saying with Yapstam's, I think he's come out and said he's going to play a 4-3-3. I think it's going to be less about conventional wing player, more about sort of inside forwards, if you like. So in pre-season, we've seen the likes of Dom Samuel, Dennis Rackles out in that wing-ish position, if you like, where they're more focused on, you know, going towards the goal rather than looking for someone in the box. There's been far more of the pullbacks and work it inside rather than the hopeful cross into the box for someone to get their head on.
The contrast in styles between Yapstam and Brian McDermott is quite remarkable, actually. I mean, McDermott is very much, I mean, he was a winger himself, get it on, down the flanks and get the crosses in. Stam's style of play, as you quite rightly allude to, is much more inside forward and work it in those areas. Very Dutch, with certainly an element of English in there, with a high intensity. And it's the reason why I don't think we won't see many truly sort of out and out wingers signed for us. Certainly more inside forwards, as Johnny alludes to.
Liam Kelly is a name that sort of come out of nowhere, really. We obviously watched his free kicks in YouTube highlights a few years ago, but he'd sort of fallen off the radar a little bit in recent years. But he's a player that seems to have a new lease of life. I understand he's played quite a lot and he looks pretty decent. He certainly fills that set-piece gap that we all bemoaned last year with the, you know, the woeful deliveries we're having to put up with, or inconsistent at least, from the likes of Oliver Norwood and Jordan Obita. How happy are you to see a sort of a different sort of player? He's a very small player, technically gifted, but maybe not someone that we've got to look in under a McDermott or a Clark. How happy are you to see him in the mix?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've seen him for the under-21s when he's had opportunities in the last couple of years, and he looks a very tidy player, as you say, very technically gifted, very talented. Seems that new breed of footballer who knows everything that's around him within a five-metre radius and knows exactly what to do with it with his next touch. And it's good to see that, you know, the size isn't holding him back, because there's been a big thing in English football over the last 15, 20 years about taller players. I mean, it's a Eurocentric argument, but someone like, who's the friend? Griezmann, who couldn't get a role at a French youth academy because they said he was too small. And now look at him, he's the Euros top scorer and one of the best players in the world. So it's good to see that, you know, size isn't an issue for him, and he seems like a very, very talented player.
How important was it getting someone of that, we touched on it earlier, Dave, that aggressive mentality of Van der Berg? How important was Reading getting someone like that?
We haven't had a great deal of bite in the tackle over the last couple of years. He does step over the line. He admits that himself. But, you know, provided he keeps himself on the parky side of acceptable, then great. In terms of importance, absolutely. It's incredibly important. You need that ball winner to just... He might be limited. You mentioned earlier in this very show that he was clearly a limited player. But he's a ball winner, and he's there to sort of win the ball and lay it off simple to the midfielders, the more creative midfielders around him. He's not going to contribute much to the attack. He has given a couple of driving runs forward in pre-season, but he's not exactly what we call creative, but then that's not his role.
He's Mikel Leisurewood. He's a break up the play and allow the more creative types, the Kellys, the Norwoods and the Williams of this world, to do the hard stuff.
Absolutely.
We'll do the fancy stuff, should I say.
If he scores a goal that wins us promotion, thumbs up.
Yeah. Is a disciplinary record any sort of worry?
Yes. Anybody remember Andy Bernal?
I certainly do. Yeah.
Limited but wholehearted, and crossed the line quite a bit. But then Andy Bernal, I suppose, played in a time when you could get away with a bit more. You know, even back in the 90s, it was still... You look at some of the highlights on YouTube, and I think if you look at... one game in particular sticks out, Reading v Stoke in August 94, and there's extended highlights on YouTube. And you look at some of the challenges, and 50-50 balls, and both players are going in, sort of 2 feet into each other, smacking legs together, and they just sort of, you know, pat on the back, get up, run after the ball when they've completely missed it and gone into each other.
A certain Jason McAteer at Wembley in that very season.
Yes, yeah, exactly. thanks for that.
Sorry. 21 years.
In some ways, you could argue that he's a player whose time has gone. In fact, I suppose you could say he played necessarily in his time. But having said that, we have been desperately crying out for somebody to just, you know, put in that one challenge that lifts the crowd. Because over the last 2 years, with the exception of a few notable exceptions, it's been dead in the Medeski. You need someone to just bang, smack someone, and, you know, win the ball cleanly, take it away, and lift
even
the
slightly uncleanly will do. Just win the ball.
Yeah, something like that.
So, are we happy with that group, or do you still think there's work to be done in the transfer market on the midfield front?
Personally, I'm happy with that group. If all the players there stay the same, I think you've got a very good Championship 3 and decent enough backups there as well.
Dave?
Yeah, I'm happy with it. Given the way that we're going to be playing, it seems to be fairly well balanced. Plenty of experience in there, and hopefully plenty of protection for that young back back line.
Yeah, the X factor is going to be Williams and Norwood, but we'll just have to wait and see what happens on the transfer front with those players. I'm sure, well, I very much hope that the club have got contingencies in mind anyway. But if you do have interest in Oliver Norwood or Danny Williams, please make yourself known and quickly. The last thing we want is this sort of thing dragging on till deadline day and then we're scrambling around. But that's the price you pay when you're a small fish these days, which unfortunately we are. Right, moving on to the forwards. I would say strikers, but there's very few actual strikers. There's a lot of forward players in this. Roy Behrens, Dennis Rackles, Jan Kermigan, Dominic Samuel, Matey, whose name first name I've already forgotten.
Yaku
Matey.
I thought you were just calling him Matey.
Matey. Yeah. Yaku Matey and Joseph Mendez are your group of forwards. And once again, much like the defence, Dave, unfortunately, I'm going to sit here and say that is probably the weakest group of forwards we've had at the football club for a long time.
Yes, I think so. If there's one thing that Reading have consistently had over the last certainly 20 to 30 years that I've been supporting the club, it has been good goalkeepers and good forwards, at least one good forward in the squad, generally. There are a few exceptions. And this is possibly, probably the second season in a row where we've started the season without a particularly good forward. We all thought we were going to get a decent one when we signed Matej Vidra last season. Look how that turned out. It doesn't exactly strike fear into the opposition. I mean, you've got some competent players there. I mean, Jan Kermigan, he's quite capable of scoring 12 to 15 goals this season. He'll obviously be, for me, I think he'll be the player that we play around. Rackles is flattered to deceive, although he's clearly shown that he knows where the net is when given a chance. Samuel at championship level, completely unproven. Yaku Mete, completely unproven. Joseph Mendez hasn't exactly lit the world, or set the world alight in France's second division. And Roy Behrens, not even entirely sure that you could class him as a forward. He's more of a, I'd look at him as more of a Gareth McCleary type player.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
No. It's a very fluid situation with players. John Swift as well. We saw him playing in the front line against Bournemouth as well. So it is a bit more of a fluid situation with this 4-3-3 that Stam seems to be leaning towards. You touched on it there, though, Dave. And Johnny, I'll put to you as well. Where are the goals coming from? Is this going to be a very team effort where you're expecting lots of players to chip in with 8 to 10 goals? Or do you see a name there that is going to get you 15, 20?
I think Dennis Rackles could get 15, but then I think in the style of play that we're going to play, he's not really going to have the opportunity to get 15. I think it will be that team mentality, that team ethic, that you've got three players in the front line, and then you're going to have players like Williams and Swift charging forward to get themselves on the end of things. I think in Behrens, Rackles and Kermigan, you have a decent front three. Behind that, like you say, it's very much unproven. Yaku Mete comes with a big reputation in that he was being chased by Premier League clubs, and as I sort of alluded to earlier, perhaps we can offer him a better route to a first team than those other clubs. As you say, Joseph Mendez, I mean, I hope there's some Moneyball stuff going on there, because it doesn't look particularly promising with him. And Dom Samuel, done it at League One level, but does seem to be a little bit blighted by injuries. It's a decent forward line. I disagree that I think it's not the weakest forward line we've had. Perhaps in terms of an out-and-out star, yes, but I think in terms of depth, there's a decent enough amount there to see that we will, stay afloat and score enough goals.
I don't know, Dave. That forward line to me reminds me of the sort of 99-ish 2000 sort of front line when you had experienced players like Keith Scott,
Martin Williams,
being backed up by
that Fleck.
That
does worry me. And the analogy is absolutely right. Whereas previously, as you say, we've always had at least one star striker, as it were, and Trevor Senior, who was replaced by Jimmy Quinn. Then you had Lee Nogan and Stuart Lovell, who knew where the net was.
Who did we have in 03, 04? four.
Yeah, Forster.
Forster and Goethe.
Yeah, that's true. Then the year after, Morgan Kitson, wasn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. And Forster also played that season, but missed half of it because of a contractual dispute. Mm. So, you know, but then, of course, you know, say Dave Kitson.
Came alive that year, didn't he?
Well, exactly. So, in terms of depth, it's all very samey.
Mm.
You know, very same in terms of... necessarily style of play. They're obviously different players, but they're all of the same calibre of player. Behrens, Reckles and Kermigant are of a particular calibre. Samuel, Mete and Mendes are put in a slightly lower calibre at the moment. There's no standout feature that says, you know, we've got to watch this guy. The opposition is saying we've got to watch this guy, you know, because it's just all very much the same.
It looks feast or famine for me. A lot of those players are either going to be great or they're just going to be, you know, nowhere. And I would just like to see that name signed either on loan or a permanent deal. Someone, you know, the Lafondre type. There's someone that just, hook or by crook, gets you those 10 goals. You can bank on them. If you play them, you will get those 10 goals. And I don't see that in this team, and it worries me, especially because we're talking about a team that, you know, hasn't been creating a lot of goals, and they have added some players to the mix, but it's a lot of the same faces behind them that weren't creating a lot of goals for players last season. And if that continues to be the case and you've not got a high calibre of forward, again, it's we don't seem to have that player that you can lead the line and who will make a chance for himself. We haven't got that Forster, that long type of figure that will go, Ross McCormack, who plays Fulham, that will create something out of nowhere for himself. It's players that are going to rely on each other. Now, I know that that costs a lot of money, but it is worrying.
Yeah, and it's a point that I wanted to make about the transfers in general, I think. That none of those are outstanding big names, are they? And, you know, like you say, you have to pay money to get that sort of player. But John Swift aside, none of these players have even played in England. Roy Behrens aside, I don't think any of them come with a particularly good pedigree. And when you bear in mind that we've lost 10, 11 players, if you include the loans that have gone out, the free transfers that have gone out, Tish Boller that we've sold, you know, you're replacing almost an entire team, and you can't say that any of those are the first name on the team sheet.
No.
Or even a name on the team sheet, can you?
No.
I'd say Swift and Behrens aside, I don't think you'll see any of them in the starting lineup against Preston on Saturday.
I think you'll find Van den Berg will play.
Okay. And maybe Yacoula. Van den Berg
will play central midfield.
I think you look at that list, though, and you go back over the pre-season results. We sort of didn't really touch on them in too great a detail, but there was the win at Boreham Wood. We won a friendly over in Holland as well. We beat Swindon with a couple of late goals, lost to AFC Wimbledon, and then drew with Bournemouth at home. But you look through all those games, there's not a starting lineup that sticks out. It's a very fluid situation. I could probably name half the team that's going to start against Preston. But beyond that, I think there's a lot of questions. And is that a good thing or a bad thing for you when you go into the season not knowing your strongest team?
I think in terms of not knowing your strongest team, it's a different situation for the midfield and the forwards for me. Because I think with the forwards, you've got almost, I wouldn't say the luxury of the choice, but you've certainly got a lot of players in there who you'd be happy to throw in. Whereas with the forwards, I mean, I don't think you really know what you're going to throw in. I think the back line and the goalkeeper, or maybe not the goalkeeper, but the back line certainly picks itself.
I think for me, I'll just go back to the point that I made earlier. Certainly where the forwards are concerned, and the rest of the side is very much the same. It's all of the same sort of calibre.
Yeah,
you know, all of the players are similar sort of caliber, and so, you know, if you've got 11 players on a pitch and they have another squad member who's of the same caliber, they might have different qualities and they might be able to open up a game in a different way. But then, you know, when you come up against opposition, you know, like Preston are going to play totally differently to say Newcastle, who are going to play totally different to say Burton, you know, it's striking me as a season where we're going to see a lot of chopping and changing, because things possibly are we're going to struggle in games.
You know,
we're not going to dominate games. We're going to, you know, we might have periods of domination, but we're, you know, certainly against the teams that top end of the division, as I said, Newcastle, Villa, Derby, Brighton, they're all going to be at the top end of the division. We're not going to match those. I can't see us matching those this season.
It would take a lot of those players playing at their very best. Mm-hmm. I think you know, in the past couple of seasons, we've seen a lot of players not playing at their very best. This needs to click. A lot of moving pieces need to fall into place, and players need to hit form at the right time for this to work.
I think all those players that have come in need to hit the ground running, because it's barely a championship quality squad, I think.
Just before I then go on to then what you are expecting this season, just pick out a few names that haven't actually got squad numbers, and it's the reason I haven't included them on that preview. So you've got Tariq Fosu, Jack Stacey, Craig Tanner and Aaron Cool, none of whom have got squad numbers this year. Now, all of them, with the exception of Cool, have featured at some point over pre-season, but it does send out a bit of a signal that they've not been given squad numbers this year. Are you surprised to see none of those four given squad numbers?
Surprised and disappointed. I think certainly, well, all four of them have been out on loan. All right, Cool hasn't exactly set the world alight, but he's made, you know, the loans that he's had have been fair to terrible. But Craig Tanner, again, contact of mine, someone who I used to work for as a Plymouth Argyle season ticket holder. Played very, very well for Plymouth last season, and they think that he would easily make championship standard. Can't say much for Jack Stacey, don't know any Carlisle fans, but he scored two or three goals last season, didn't he, for them in the
stunner,
last...
Yeah.
Against Bristol Rovers, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not he'll make the grade, I don't know, but he's an energetic, youthful player. And of course, he started against Derby on the last day of the season, 2015, got injured, and hey presto, who came on for him? Tariq Fosu. And lit that game up. And did very, very well last season at Fleetwood and latterly at Accrington. Yes, it's League Two football, but it's still competitive football. And so for that, you know, just for that reason alone, given that they've done it at that level, they at least deserve the chance at championship level. Mm. Yes, all right, the loan system is completely being decimated. But if they're not given a squad number, what are they going to do?
Well, it looks like they're being lined up for loan moves. At least you would certainly hope so. I don't think they're going to sell any of those four names. Anyway, Johnny, do you think, you know, you look at that and you look at there are already a lot of young players in that mix. Is it possibly wise to just say straight out the bat, okay, you four, we're going to send you away this season. We're going to want you back to hit the ground running as sort of senior players next season?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, you know, like I said, Stam hasn't really sent many players out on loan. I think you can read a bit too much into the squad numbers. I mean, Jonathan Bond's still number one, for God's sake, which we've just completely discredited. And again, when you look at that, I think, like you said, Dave, they're all much of a muchness. Whether Fosu would get in ahead of someone like Mendes or Samuel, whether Cool would get in ahead of that midfield that I think we've just about agreed has decent depth to it, you know, I'm not sure. So I think going out on loan is probably the best option for them.
Okay, so let's look at expectation levels then. We've sort of been through that entire squad, and looking at the situation as it is at the moment, again, the transfer window is still open for another 4 weeks, so a lot can change. But looking at all that, what are your expectations for this season? Johnny, I'm going to start with you.
Is this expectation or where do I think we'll finish?
Well, it's both.
Expectation is we don't go down. Expectation is we have a manager who, taking his first steps into proper senior management, looks like he knows what he's doing. We stay in games. We are respectable. I think expectations from the fans that realise that we're not chasing promotion this year. We are a club that's finished 17th and 18th in the last couple of seasons.
19th even.
Yep. Sorry to break that to you. But that sense of realism, I mean, you know, everyone sort of says, oh, what do you think we'll finish at the end of the season? And for once, I'm not going to say, oh, you know, I think we'll make a late playoff charge, because I don't see that in this squad.
Dave?
I think, yeah, it's difficult to argue with that. I think the expectation for me is that we're competent, you know, competent across the board, competent in terms of that we'll probably, or hopefully, win as many as we lose. I'm expecting to lose between 17 games, 20 games, something like that next season. And if we can win around that amount, see, and you know, what is that? That's 45 points if you can get 15 wins. So provided we stay clear of relegation, like we've done the last couple of seasons, but you know, we're comfortably sort of mid-table, And we're competitive throughout the whole season, and there's none of this sort of supporter sniping at each other, not getting behind the manager because he's not doing particularly well at any particular stage of the season or particular player or what have you. You know, provided that we just have a solid, consistent season, comfortably mid-table, and certain players across the board show aptitude, certainly the newer players and the younger players, they show aptitude, they show willing, and the manager is like Johnny alluded to, competent, and shows that he's learning, certainly needs to learn the division quickly, then we'll, you know, I think that's where we need to be.
Yeah.
The beauty with this season, beauty is possibly the wrong word.
The interest in the season.
Is that we simply don't know which way it's going to go. You look at the various pundits across, you know, who are predicting the championship. You know, you had Ian Abrahams, a.k.a. Moose on TalkSport, predicting that we'll go down. You've got other pundits who are predicting us to be sort of top half of the table. You just don't know. You just simply don't know.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say, this is the first season I think I can remember where I could honestly make a case for Reading finishing anywhere between 1st and 24th. I could sit down there and I could explain you a reason why we're going to finish there. Now, where I actually think we'll finish will be around upper mid-table. I think around about 10th, I think I'm sort of leaning towards at the moment. But I could see a scenario where some of these younger players fire, some of the established ones have the season of their lives, and somehow Reading sneak into an automatic promotion place. I could also see them, you know, having an awful season, failing to gel, and we're battling it out in the bottom three. Like I said, I think it's more likely we're going to be somewhere in the middle there. But yeah, keep expectations on the ground. And as long as we're slowly moving forward, I think that's all we need. After, what, 4 or 5 seasons of decline, it's just time to stop the rot, put the brakes on, and just make those little steps forward and give yourself a real launching pad. So as long as we're not in trouble, I think everyone will be fairly happy. And it seems that you're fairly happy with Yapstam as well out there, Tullest End readers, because at the moment you're giving him about a 4 out of 5. On the approval rating that Mr. Williams here launched earlier today.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's not really much that he's done so far, to be honest. So
seemed generally happy with the way he's building his squad. So it'll be interesting to see where that sits a month from now. But right, that just about wraps up a very long pub chat. You know, we like spending extra time in the pub here after such a long summer. So we will move straight on now to how you see the season. We will take your thoughts in the mailbag.
Get social with the boys. Find them on Twitter at The Tarlhurst End and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Thank you very much to everyone who has continued to send in their thoughts to the mailbag. You can get them into thetarlhurstend@gmail.com or on Twitter using the hashtag TTE podcast. Also, you can hit us up on our Facebook page and all various manners of communicado. We take it all, and we very much appreciate everyone who does get in touch. We'll do our very best to read out everybody's response. Or just a quick note, though, if you're sending us an email, and we do sort of tend to, we very much appreciate your in-depth thoughts, but that's what the website's for. So if you can keep those under about 100 words or so, that very much helps us out. But let's delve in then. We start with a regular to this show, Mark Sugar. Mark, welcome back. He says, if you could have any bet on the team or individual within the team for the new season, what would it be and why?
I'm going to eulogise now. After seeing him for 20 minutes in pre-season, I did put this out on Twitter. John Swift will win player of the season. I've also backed it with my new shirt, which you might...
This isn't that works really right well for radio, Johnny.
But just for the viewers, I have bought myself a brand new Carabao shirt with a John Swift 8 on the back. I've been that taken in by a cameo against Swindon.
I hope the money that the club received is well spent.
I hope he spends the money while he gets all the royalties for me putting his name on back of my shirt.
I don't think they get that.
Dave, just got to remember that if you love him or hate him, he still gets paid.
He does. Dave, what bet would you put on and why?
Christ, no. This is a classic question from somebody who works in the betting industry.
Gamble aware.
If you could have a bet on any team or individual within the team for the new season, what would it be? I genuinely don't know.
Who do you think will win player of the season?
It depends who he plays.
I would. Do you know
you
what?
Just don't know who he's going to play. You don't know how we're going to do.
Who'll get the
you
most yellow cards? We finish. Know who'll get the most yellow cards.
Oh, that's a fair one, actually. Yeah. All right. Red cards. It's going to be. I'll put on Joey Vandenberg to be the worst disciplinarian in the division. There we go.
I would put a sneaky little bet on Liam Kelly to get into double digit goals because I think with his set pieces. And if he does play in that midfield, I think he could pop up with a few goals. So that, and again, I would be expecting very generous odds is the reason I'd be putting
yeah,
money on.
I mean, he'd be the first midfielder to crack 10 goals since Gilfie, probably, wouldn't he? Or...
Yeah. And just, I mean, he's got such a good set. He's got such a
midfielder.
Good set.
Oh, midfield. Yes, midfielder. You did say midfielder.
But how many goals did Gilfie Sigurdsson get from set pieces? There must have been at least 6 or 7 of those.
And many were penalties as well, weren't
they? Yeah. But Kelly could easily get, if he gets 4 or 5 free kicks and pops up around the box with another 4 or 5, I don't think he's going to win many headers, bless him. But again, that would be an outside punt. So, you know, we were asking any bet. So there you go. Right, Ollie Allen, one of our assistant editors, says, which players do you think we'll see go on loan before the transfer window shuts?
Fosu, Stacey, Tanner, cool.
Yeah. Anyone else? Sean Long's already gone off to Cambridge.
I think you might see some of the young defenders go. Someone like Rob Dickey again, or Dominic Higham.
Yeah. Assuming we sign the cover, then absolutely. I think they will.
Yeah.
Goalkeeper.
Yeah, I'd expect Bond to go out for the season and maybe more. Tim Redmayne, why doesn't Tanner have a squad number but still play against Bournemouth? Is he worth a squad place? Dave, I think you very much on the pro-Tanner bandwagon.
Why doesn't he have a squad number? Who knows? Clearly, Stam has made his mind up on him for now. So either he's going to be, he doesn't think he's going to cut the mustard, or he's going to go on loan. Is he worth a squad place? Based on his form at Plymouth, he's got to be worth a squad place. The question is, can he step up? But you've got to give youth that chance.
Yeah.
But who knows? I genuinely can't read Stam on this one.
George Willis says, can't see where the goals are going to come from. Orlando Sarr would have been the perfect front man in Stam's team. We need a striker. I think we're all broadly in agreement there.
Yeah. Although you do seem to
not
have
about
a
Orlando Sarr, but.
But I always did like Orlando Sarr.
Yeah, I did.
He was like a Pog 1.1, wasn't he?
I liked his one game where he scored goals. He scored in three.
It was a hat-trick, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Sarr's a strange one. We're not going to cover old ground, but long and short of it is that I felt that when him and Vidra played together, they connected really well, particularly under Clark.
His red card against Derby, turning point of the season for me.
Not the QPR...
No.
Not Fulham, wasn't it?
They were flying. He gets that ban, gets a 3-game suspension. I think Vidra got injured during that time and then everything just...
Yeah, still went on to win five games on the trot after that, even without Sarr, up to Rotherham when we drew 1-1.
Yeah, I just think the momentum, I think you could have built... Anyway, old ground. Yeah, I think we all agree. We sort of need a front man, George. Lower rule, map out the first few fixtures and what would be an okay start. Now, I did a piece you can read up on the Tarlhurst End that sort of shows that it's not actually that important to get off to a great start if you're looking to stay up anyway. However, if you're looking to go up, about 50% of the teams that go up or finish in the top six at least, 50% of them are in that top six after 6 games. So it shows you the sort of importance of the start if you're looking to go up, but it's not the be all and end all. But looking at the fixtures, gents, and I'll read them out for you. In terms of who we've got league-wise anyway. We start off with Preston at home, then we've got Wolves away, Newcastle away, Brighton at home, Cardiff away, Ipswich home. What would you be happy with points-wise out of those 6 games?
Literally, as you rattled them off, I just literally went, you got to be thinking that you've got to win your home games. You have to go and win your home games. So there's 9 points straight away. The likely it is that we're going to be beaten up at Newcastle. Like it or lump it, we are likely to be beaten up. As most teams will be.
Got a good record at Molineux, though.
Point there. And what was the other one? The other away?
Cardiff away.
You've got to look for a point there. They're teams that we can easily match and get something at. So you're looking at that, for the first 6 games, you're looking at 11 points.
Wow. That would be one of our most impressive starts in a long time. Johnny?
Just the 1 defeat at Newcastle. That's realistic as well.
As you reeled off those fixtures, I thought 7 or 8 points would be decent. Win both the home games, Preston and Ipswich. Maybe a point at Wolves.
Brighton at home as well.
Brighton at home. I'm not so sure about that. If Brighton can continue the momentum they had, then you know none of those games are gimmies. But then with the exception of, I'd say, Newcastle, none of them are, like you say, none of them are particularly full-on hopes, if you like. I 8 points, I'd be happy.
I said I would take eight. If you offered me eight now, I'd be more than happy with that.
I think, yeah, absolutely, I'd be happy with that. I just think, you know, you look at it, you've got to go and try and at least win the home games, and it's not beyond the realms of possibility that we do.
Preston and Ipswich are those you've really got to win.
Yes, yeah.
Brighton are going to be an interesting proposition. Obviously, they did really well last season. It'll be interesting to see how they bounce back. Cardiff are absolute hodgepodge of a team. Never know what you're going to get. Newcastle, we should get hammered up there, and it'd be no shame. I remember the last time Newcastle were in this division, we went there with a young, inexperienced side under Brendan Rodgers and got a stuffing,
live,
thanks to Schoeller.
On the telly as well, wasn't it?
Live, yeah, on the telly, Scott Davis played. Yeah.
Schoeller and Miobi hat-trick.
Yeah, and I think Alan Smith should have been sent off after about 20 minutes, but the referee absolutely...
Alex Pearce gave away a hilarious goal as well, I seem to remember.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, so I think about 8 points would be the minimum sort of mark, and hopefully anything up to 11. Right, the Royal Stone. Who do you think will win our player of the season? For me, it's got to be Swift. There you go, Johnny. Getting with you. I would say... I think it might be Dennis Rackles wins it for me. But Dave?
Got to go with left field. Got to go George Evans.
Yeah, like it. Ian Phillips. If you can make one realistic signing for Reading, who would it be and why? This is nothing against you, Ian, but I hate this question because... what is a realistic signing for Reading? If someone's value falls and the club wants to get rid of him, great. But I would have liked to have seen Reading sign someone like a Tom Bradshaw, someone who's proven, or a Keemar Roofe. But you look at Keemar Roofe going for $3.5 million to Leeds. Is that a realistic signing for Reading now? You just don't know. So, again, sorry, Ian, I'm not hating on you. I find this an impossible question to answer. Johnny?
The one name that sticks out to me, and Reading have been linked with him, although I don't know whether we'd go for him now because we've got a similar player in Swift, is Bradley Dack, who's done it at League One level. And, you know, we certainly were being linked with him, I think possibly while Brian McDermott was in charge, but I'm not sure with that. So, you know, it might be that the club has moved on to different targets. I think it's, you know, we want that sort of dynamic striker, someone who can make a difference. Dak, like I say, is more of an attacking midfielder rather than a striker. The other one's Paddy Madden, who I think has done a decent job at League One level for the last couple of years. And
very strange what happened at Yeovil, wasn't it, with him?
But yeah, he could.
Dave, any targets springing to mind for you?
Well, I would have quite happily gone for someone like Nick Powell, but of course he's gone to Wigan. So I mean, the problem you've got is there aren't very many sort of quality free transfers out there. There is one player I think who I believe is, and correct me if I'm wrong, without a club, is Paul Konchesky. There's your left back. He might be a little bit old, but he's experienced. FA Cups, England caps, Premier League, and certainly Championship. He's competent and he's a decent player. He's a solid player at this level. I'd go out and get him, stick him on a 2-year contract. He doesn't have a bad injury record. And beef up that defence.
If you sign him, though, do you not then basically concede that Jordan Abiti is not the answer? Not going to sign him and pay him that sort of wage to be number two?
No, of course not. But then Jordan Abiti can play further up the pitch. He's number 11 after a while, after all.
Mm-hmm. Wants to be number 10, doesn't he? Yeah, I wouldn't go against that. Right, moving on. Andy Walker. On one hand, I'm worried about our lack of quality. On the other, I think team spirit and motivation might be good.
Yeah, I think Yapstam seems like the sort of manager, obviously we don't know this yet, but he seems like the sort of manager who would be able to bring a team together when it's needed and certainly give them a good kicking when it's needed as well. I think he's brought in those Dutch players not only to sort of teach about his way of football, if you like, but also to give that little bit of comfort for him and for the others in the squad as well. So you'd hope that the team spirit is good, and as much as we complain about the direction of the club, I'm sure the players would have been thinking that as well. I'm sure the players will be sitting there last season thinking, oh God, another manager's gone, all this sort of stuff. So now, with what Tiger said, with Stam in charge, with seemingly a long-term plan, hopefully the players will be happier as well, because not only were the players unhappy last season, the fans were unhappy and there was a toxic atmosphere, and I can't imagine that it was just within the fans, it was probably within the squad as well.
Nothing further to add, Jonah.
Fair enough. John Hyde, anyone worried that our owner's strategy seems to be to bring in a whole new team every summer? I think we touched on that, and hopefully that is shifting away. Raw Hoops, which of the new signings excites you the most?
Swift.
Oh. Wow, that sounded not disturbing at all, Johnny. I think we might have our open there. Okay, Johnny's nailed his colours to the mast. Dave?
Sorry, there's no coming back from that, is there?
I can't follow that. Which other news? I'm quite looking forward to seeing Roy Behrens. You know, as someone who's actually played and actually received decent reviews, albeit for one season in the Bundesliga, I've got to have something about him. I'm looking forward to seeing him, and I do like a wide player as well.
Mm. That's just the thing I was saying earlier. Behrens comes with a good pedigree. He didn't actually play that much for Hertha Berlin last year in the Bundesliga.
That's what I meant. The season before he did.
Yeah.
That's what I mentioned, one season.
Yeah, didn't play at all last season. But if he can recover, and yeah, he can certainly be an exciting player. And Yakubu Meite, if he learns English and gets anywhere near the team, then, as we've said, he seemingly has the potential to be special.
Yeah, can't add much more to that. Although, we'll take this opportunity to bring in the transfer rumour, sensational transfer rumour of the summer that doesn't seem like it's going to come off now. One Raphael van der Vaart, apparently, who phoned up Reading to say, can I come and play with you? Just ridiculous. Sort of really rogue transfer rumour that you just didn't see coming. It doesn't look like it's going to happen. It looks like he's going to move to Denmark to play for Midtjylland alongside one Mikkel Andersen. So it looks like it's not going to happen. Japstam, you know, confirmed this actually happened. This isn't idle speculation. But it seems that they've opted against signing him. Would you have taken that punt, Dave?
I think it would have been absolutely far too expensive. The guy would command a huge and astronomic wage, particularly at championship level, I think. We just couldn't afford it. I wouldn't have wanted to have broken the bank for a 33-year-old with a questionable injury record.
Johnny?
And this is the other thing as well, is I think he played, again, similar to Behrens, he only played 3 or 4 games for Real Betis last season. So it's clear that a mid-table La Liga side didn't see much in him. So you can't imagine a year later, you know, a year wiser perhaps, but probably a year slower as well. You can't imagine that in a high-intensity formation like Stam's going to bring, he would have been the best piece. In terms of shirt sales and excitement and buzz and, wow, you know, Stam knows a lot of people, absolutely, but the right name...
I think if we were pushing for promotion or we were looking to push for promotion this season and we could get 30 games out of him, then I think it might have been worth a one-year contract. But the fact is, as we've touched on earlier, we're looking to, at the very least, just stay in the division and be competitive. And, you know, signing, yeah, it would have taken us to the next level, but how many games would he have played? You know, if he had a decent injury record, then yeah, maybe you'd look at it at that.
He would
be
coming to
the injury. It's the injury record that does it for me, I think.
Yeah, and it's just what I said. I mean, there's a reason that he's phoning up Reading asking can he come to play for them, with all the greatest respect to Japstam in the world. It's a player that's fallen on hard times recently. We've been burned with flary Dutch players in our recent past. It's a risk that just wasn't worth taking. If he wanted to come here and take a pay-as-you-play deal, a heavily bonus-laden contract, great. But if he's off on those terms, bigger clubs than Reading are going to take a punt on him. And like you say, you cannot take the risk in the financial position we're in on a player like that. If we were, like you say, going for promotion and you just need one little piece to complete the puzzle, but we're nowhere near there. So if it still happens, well... great, it'll be very interesting, but it doesn't look like it is. So, what could have been? He joins Robbie Fowler and Momo Sissoko and Gylfi Sigurdsson, number 2, in those could have been a Royals. Daley Thompson.
But Les Ferdinand and Martin Keown were Royals.
Yeah, sadly.
And there we go.
Indeed. Right, Law Royal, So TT Podcast. The question is, 2015-16 kit versus 2016-17 kit. Johnny, you're wearing it. I can see it close up now in front of my own eyes. A very special kit launch this year, with it being literally launched into space.
Yeah.
Did you get the shirt that came down from space?
I did, actually, yeah.
You did?
Yeah, I caught it.
Oh, well done.
I went up in a balloon and got it
myself. Oh, well, fantastic.
Rented one from Prospect.
Good to even keep yourself busy this summer. Yeah. Dave, what do you reckon? See it now in front of you?
I like it. I liked it when it was launched. The fact that it's full hoops all the way around, yes, it's faded, but the appearance is a full hoop. Winner for me.
Mm. Yeah, I very much like the home kit. The away kit, though, is...
Oh, my God.
Awful. awful. I can't even describe it, what colour it is. It's just,
it's like
pukey,
fluorescent, isn't it? It's just, I mean,
I like kits like that.
Really?
I like nice bright away kits.
No, I like the red.
The African Violet didn't do anything for me last season. It's pink, let's face it. It's pink at the end of the day.
Can we please
blacks and shades of grey and navy blues. I mean, if an away kit for me, and this is just, away kit for me has to be predominantly a colour that is not a predominant colour on the home kit. So when we've had the white away kit and we've had the blue away kits, I'm kind of like, what's the point?
What about the yellow one from, I think it was 04-05 with the sort of blue, it was a West Coast strip, definitely.
That would have been...
I'm talking yellow, not fluorescent yellow.
2000-2001.
Okay. Was that early?
Yeah, that banana. Yes.
Or the Spain one in 04-05?
Spain one was 01-02 and 02-03.
Yeah. Oh, that was West Coast.
See, they're good kits.
I just like the red ones. I like the 94-95 away kit was a favourite of mine. So was the 2011-12.
The only red one that I truly, truly like is the 96-97, 97-98 one.
Yeah,
that was a good one
with the white sleeves.
Yeah, the 98-99 first season at Madejski, Melchester Rovers kit is what I like to call it. not a fan of that. The orange 99-2001 away kit, the orange with the blue band,
blue hoop. Yeah,
big fan of that.
Yeah, I like that.
The yellow kit, the yellow third kit that we wore up at Rotherham and won. So Alan Pardew decided we're going to wear it at Bristol City because it caught us good luck. And subsequently lost 4-0. Liked that, even though it's a bit Oxfordy, you know. But you can't really get.
It was before my time, but when I see it in pictures, I like the blue and yellow hoops and the red and yellow hoops.
Red and yellow hoops is my favourite away kit.
Yeah,
with the black shorts. Absolutely. If they brought something like that back, I'd go out and buy it straight away. I haven't bought a kit since 2008-09.
We've only got 11 months to wait now to see if that's going to be the new away kit.
Well, exactly. Rock and roll.
Next time we have a meeting with Tiger, we'll put in a good word. Right, we could go on for a long time. So, so what wins in terms of the kits? This season's or last season's?
Oh, this season's by a long way.
This season's? Yeah. I'm agreed. Clean sweep. Brian Davis, a very disappointing Titish Boller leaving. Hope, but do not expect a single penny of it reinvested into the team, though. Again, we sort of covered that. And Notorious says, the boys look like they're enjoying football with Stam. Stam seems lively on the sidelines, and I'm excited for the campaign.
I think every player looks like they enjoy playing under a new manager, just about, because they want to play. So we'll have to wait and see how it goes.
The thing is, he's a manager. When he talks to you and if he gives you advice, you're going to listen because of what he's done in the game.
I'll tell you one thing about Yap Stam. 5 times, at least, we asked him to give us a wave at Swindon. He did not.
Boo. Stam out.
Embarrassing.
Very much so. You know, we want to see players. We've talked about this on this show a lot last season, season before. We want to see players playing with that smile on their face. They want to be there rather than they're just going through the motions. And hopefully Stam can bring that out because, again, he's a man you respect. And when he talks, you're going to listen. At least at the start of his reign now, what happens 6 months down the line is up for question. But for the time being, he's got that gravitas. Ian Martin, my thoughts are a mid-table finish with no relegation worry would be a good season after the last 2 years.
Yep.
I think, again, we all want to see forward steps. Jack Killick, some fans may moan that not much money was spent, but I think we've got young, hungry and good players all on the cheap. Every single deal that Brian Teverden has done looks like a good one, including getting 5 million Tish, so fair play to him. There's a lot of credit. Reasonably optimistic for the new season. Now, come on, you ass. We've not mentioned Brian Teverden's name. He does seem to be... He's not quite Nick Hammond. He's much more involved, it seems, than Nick Hammond was. Very much the continental style that's come into the club now, where he's arranging a lot of the deals for Stam rather than Stam going out and saying, I want this player. Are you sort of happy with that?
Provided they sign the right types of players, yeah. I think it's probable that Stam identifies an area of the pitch that that he needs to strengthen. He identifies an area of the pitch where he wants Teverden to go out and find a player. And Teverden clearly has almost a scouting remit as well as director of football, whatever it is they call him now. If it's successful, who's to complain?
Yeah.
Nick Hammond was successful.
But you're not... there's no part of you that's worried that we've moved away from the traditional English model.
Game's global.
Johnny?
Yeah, and no, I think Brian's... doing a pretty good job. Like you said, 5 million for Tish Bollers, nothing to be sniffed at, especially when there was a bit of outrage when it seemed like he could be going for something like 2.5 million. I mean, the one thing you'd say about all these signings is, as much as we berated them for we haven't signed anyone proven or that we have heard of, or certainly that, you know, the layman would have heard of, it's clear that they've signed these players for a reason. And that, whether that's statistics, whether it's a, you know, like I said earlier, a Moneyball thing going on, or whether they just see something in these players. And let's be honest, Reading have seen a lot of players come to this club with not much of a reputation, and we've certainly made a big reputation out of them. So if they turn out to be world beaters, then fair play to them.
Fingers crossed they're the next Doyles, Longs and Hunts rather than the next Brett Williams, Cedric Bisseya,
Gordon Bennett, or Alan Bennett.
Gordon Bennett.
Yeah,
so it can go both ways. But yeah, I mean, it's really, you know, they're young, hungry, exciting players. It's great that we're signing forwards from PSG and players that are, you know, under the radar. You know, we've signed a player from Le Havre. You know, another player who signed from that football club? Riyad Mahrez. Mm. So if we get anything like that. Johnny's gesticulating me wildly across the table, completely throwing my train of thought. Johnny.
Oh, no, I was just going to say another point to make about Yap Stam. John Swift said, I believe, you know, Yap Stam was part of the reason I came here.
Yeah.
You know, having a chat with him. I'm sure it was similar with someone like Yaku Mate and certainly Van der Vaart. So, you know, it's clear that this team of Tevreden and Stam do have a bit of gravitas or a bit of influence among players.
Yeah, I'm excited by the group of signings. I think, again, they've all got the potential to be really good. It's just that, again, you have the unfortunate nagging feeling in the back of your mind, but they haven't got the proven. But again, we're in that position where we can't go out and sign proven talent. So damned if you do, damned if you don't. Right. And just to close out the mailbag as well, we don't have time to read it out in full, but Tom has sent us in a lengthy email. Thanks very much for it, Tom. He starts off by, you know, paying his tributes to Eamon Dolan and passing on his condolences. And he goes on to express how positive he is for the new season. He says, you know, from events over the past few months, we've gone from uncertainty, infighting and offline and worry to confidence, reassurance and positivity. He feels we're on the right track now moving forward. Are we totally squeaky clean? No, but we're getting there. And goes on to sort of list some of his thoughts about the new players and whatnot. And again, thank you very much for the email, Tom. But as I said, unfortunately, we can't have time to read out them all. And it brings me on to a bit of a wider point to close out the mailbag. If you've got a lot of thoughts and you're listening to things we're saying and you think, do you know what, I disagree with you guys, you certainly won't be the first and you won't be the last. If you do have wider thoughts and you want to get involved, get involved with the website. TheTownLessEnd.com is there for exactly that reason. We are an open fans website. If you've got an opinion, drop us an email. You can use the fan post feature. All you've got to do is sign up for an account on SB Nation. It takes you about 5 seconds to do, and you can get posting. You can post up anything you want. If you want something you think deserves a showcase on the front page, drop us an email, thetownlessend@gmail.com. We don't turn away a single opinion piece. You know, obviously, sadly, you know, there has to be a certain standard of writing there. For us to be able to promote it onto the main page. But if your opinions and, you know, you've got a well thought out argument, we are more than happy to host your piece, whether we agree with them or not. As I said, we don't censor anything, as long as it's not going to get us sued. So, yeah, please get in touch at thetylerstend@gmail.com. And again, please keep those thoughts coming in for the podcast throughout the season at thetylerstend on Twitter, that same email address, or facebook.com/thetylerstend. Right, let's wrap up this show now by moving on to Any Other Business.
The Tylehurst End Podcast. Any Other Business.
We're almost home, folks. If you're still with us, well done. This is your pre-season training as well. You know, we have to get your endurance up. We have to get you used to long podcasts. I can
2 hours of watching or listening to turgidness.
I can very much assure you. Yeah, exactly. You're going to be in for a lot of that. I can very much assure you that the podcast is not usually this long, but it's very rare that we have 7 signings to talk about and lots of other pieces. So thank you for sticking with us this long. I said usually we're around about the hour mark. So you can look forward to more of those shows for our own sanity as much as anything else in the coming weeks. But let's round this out. Preston are the first visitors to the Vallecy Stadium this season. Reading's first game in the EFL Championship, as it has been rebranded now. Goodbye Football League. Hello English Football League. Or just EFL. New logo and everything. Go check that out. So Preston comes to the Mineski. Dave, I'm going to start with you because you are launching. You're going to be our pre-game preview man for the website this season with your brand new feature.
Looks that way. Yeah, watch out for it later on this week.
Yep, called the Oppo.
Nicely original.
Yep. What can we expect from Preston?
Preston. Right. They are... Generally, they're quite a direct side. Simon Grayson plays a very direct style of football. It'll be an acid test very much for Stam and his side, see how they deal with that. They looked more than confident last season. They certainly opened us up almost at will in the first half last season and should have won by a handsome margin. The fact that they only won it with a 90th minute winner is more down to their poor finishing and superb goalkeeping from Al Habsi than anything. At home, we tend to do well against them. Last season was very much a bit of a kick in the teeth for the record at the Medeski, given that they'd only ever beaten us in the cup once at the Medeski. I think it's difficult to actually predict exactly how we'll do, because obviously, as we've alluded to earlier, it's we don't know how we're going to set up. We don't know how we're going to play, how the formation's going to work against certain opposition. I'm quite looking forward to it, though.
As far as the bookies...
We should win, really.
Yeah. Well, the bookies certainly see it that way. They've got us evens, Johnny. The draw is 11-5 and Preston are 3-1 to pick up all 3 points the opening day. Fair odds?
I wouldn't back us at evens.
No?
No.
I would.
This is a new pessimistic Johnny that's coming.
I think
realistic Johnny.
Yeah, 3-1s for you.
Won me the prediction league last year, but pessimism.
We'll come on to realism. That
shortly. You look at it, though, based on the fact that obviously we, supposed supporter expert, shall we call us, watch the club on a regular basis, haven't got a clue what's going to happen this season. You look at the odds for 3-1 for Preston. You know, somebody's going to lump a little bit of money on that or stick it in your accumulator. A 3-1 is...
I know one Tull End contributor and author who will probably be lumping on Preston North End. He made a fortune betting X Reading last year. One, Mr. John Keane. Judging by his Facebook feed anyway, which always full of
joyous which always bets. Has the winning bets.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Go check out the Sum of the Parts,
afterwards.
By the way. Very good read throughout the summer. Very much encourage you to go and check that out. You can listen to our interviews with John Keane from last season as well. Good to hear the book's doing pretty well, by all accounts so far. So go and check it out if you haven't yet. If you are going away on summer holidays for the next few weeks, a great account of the rise of the 2005-06 team and its subsequent fall. So with that plug aside, John, you owe me a tenner. Going back to the Preston game, then they've signed Tommy Spur, Owen Doyle, Anders Lindegaard, Ben Pringle and Callum Robinson, and they're big summer signings. But a solid mid-table side. And again, you can't... Reading have to win this kind of game. The very worst, they can't lose it. You don't want to start that negative momentum, especially with a trip to Newcastle on the horizon and Wolves as well. The last thing you want is to get off on a losing note.
No, yeah.
Wow.
Can't say any more than that.
Steam is running out of this podcast quicker than Royston Drenthe, who nicely bookended that podcast.
Royston Drenthe would have left after News Bites.
He would have done. Nicely bookended that way.
Actually, no, he'd have probably stayed for Pub Chat. He seems like the sort of thing he'd do.
Indeed. Right, let's move on then to the Prediction League. Version 3.0. I took the title first year round. Last year was won by Mr. Johnny Williams. Dave was at a handicap last year because he only came in about a third of the way into the season. Alan West isn't with us, but he is remaining a part of the Prediction League. We can't kick him out of that. He has gone for a 2-0 Reading win. What say you, defending champion?
I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw.
Dave?
I'll go for a 2-1 win.
And I'm going to go for a 1-0 Reading win. There we go, you can blame us all now when we lose, because that seems to be the general pattern of things. So that is that. So stay tuned for the Prediction League throughout the season. There we might, I don't want to say 100% we will, but we might be running one on the website. It has been talked about, so keep an eye out for that. And just generally, please do check out thetirelessend.com. There is lots of fantastic content going up. We've got some new writers putting in some great new features. We've had writings on where the transfer record has exploded in recent years. We've had pieces looking at Reading players in focus like Roy Behrens and John Swift. Lots of great content. Please head over to thetirelessend.com. Give us a follow on Twitter @thetirelessend and go to facebook.com/thetirelessend. give us a like. And as mentioned before, if you want to get involved, we'd love to have you on. This show will continue throughout the season, unless everybody quits on me. You never know. We'll generally sort of keep a general sort of pattern of Sunday, Monday, Tuesday recording for the main show. I'll be back with Charles Watts, hopefully on Friday. The podcast extra should continue as long as Charles has the free time. And yeah, just thank you very much for taking the time to join us this week. Gents, thank you very much for joining.
No worries.
No worries.
And again, all that has to be said, as we say every week, come on, you are. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail. It's funny how they always leave a trail. You smile, you smile. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. You know where the team is on your trail. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. You smile, you smile.
Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.